Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 25 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Lil L. Eddie. Ah, screwed up again. See, I got it right only once this week. Lil Eddie O'Hare, formerly of the DC TV Report and Wicked Theory Podcast. Welcome back to the show for the last time this week, Eddie. Next week, I won't have to say the name again. I won't have to try and get that right.
That's okay. How's it going?
Going great. Going great. My feet are a little cold from the, you know, walking barefoot on the metal, but hopefully I'll be able to get into get onto the 31st floor, find an office with some shag carpeting. That's just going to be so much. That's going to be great. I'm going to be able to make more fists with my toes. What I'm looking forward to.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right. And how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm having a ball.
All right, cool. All right. So minute 25 begins with John opening the stairway door with a thud and ends with Hans trying to calm everyone down. Ooh. So we end yesterday's minute with John running up the stairs barefoot on the cold metal stairway of the Nakatomi building. And what we get here is he opens the door and sees two of I'm trying not to call them terrorists here. I'm just saying bad guys the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
But they're terrorists. You know, doesn't matter.
they're thieves, you know.
They're inflicting terror regardless, even if their ultimate goal is not to kill everybody.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Because when you think of terrorists, you think of people that are trying to kill everybody. Not necessarily people who also are thieves at the same time. Spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen this. So if Alex, somehow you decided to continue listening to this, you know, you now know something else that you shouldn't know until you see later in the movie. But oh well, what can I tell you? Watch the whole movie.
They'll
please,
explain it.
Please.
You'll probably explain it in like 2 or 3 weeks.
maybe. No, yeah. Is it 2? Okay, you're right. Yeah. It'll be about 2 or 3 weeks. Good point. So John opens the door and he sees two of the bad guys wheeling something. We see one of them is Theo and we see the other one is Christoph, right? Mm-hmm. They're wheeling what look like large suitcases. Maybe it's something, maybe they borrowed it from Dell.
Well, it looks like, you know, DJ equipment. It's like the kind of stuff that like roadies are pushing around before a concert.
Yeah, it could be. That's true. Mm-hmm. That it does look more like that than Dell's trunk. You know, this is a year later, so who knows? Maybe Dell is back in New York, you know, after he finished up Thanksgiving in Chicago. He decided that he was going to fly out to L.A., you know, spend a little Christmas, crash a little party. Who knows?
Yeah. Or Theo's like, hey,
Dell Griffith, sound man.
Or Theo's like, hey, man, wherever I go, my amp follows. You know, this is.
There you go. Yeah, seriously. Yeah, but actually, Theo doesn't look to me as somebody who would care about the music. You know, he's a guy who'd be playing video games. You know, he's playing Call of Duty and stuff like that. You know, we'll have to ask Palmer. You know, what games he thinks Theo would play. You know, he'll give us a whole list.
I mean. In 1988, oof, you know, he's probably doing like adventure or some kind of RPG.
He's playing Wolfenstein 3D.
Yeah.
Something like that. So so John looks in, he sees the two of them and quickly closes the door, you know, and decides to go up the stairs to the next flight. You know, maybe there can't be that many of them here. You know, can't be able to find some floor where there's nobody else.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you got to keep going.
Yeah.
You can't really take too much time to think. Yeah.
But I like the way that he closes the door as gently as he can, even though he opened it with a thud. You know.
Yeah.
And then we're back at the party, and we get to see there's a lot of sounds of us screaming. You know, there's gunfire. There's lots of pandemonium in the party area.
Yeah, but. By the way, something that would happen only in a movie, you're not firing that gun indoors unless you have to.
Well, it is a high ceiling. You know, we're not sure how many floors this area is. But regardless, you're right. You don't do that. You would, and I wonder if they're shooting up, straight up. At what angle are they shooting? You know, are they shooting at an angle where they're just gonna maybe hit windows, or
Yeah, but also you have that giant, Frank Lloyd Wright setup where, there's so much stuff hanging from that ceiling.
Yeah.
You don't want that rock just to fall in the waterfall, just come down and cause an accident.
Right.
That
would be a little bit of a problem. Yeah, I would agree with you on
that.
And then we get a shot. And first of all, another great Jan de Bont shot here where everyone is out of focus in the background, but you see Carl – whispering something to Hans. I have no idea what he's whispering to him. Doesn't really make a difference. But we see, there's focus on the foreground, and the background is all a blur. It's done really, really well. Like I said, I have absolutely no idea what Carl could be telling him at this point. Maybe he's whispering to him the number of people that they've counted in the room or something like that. Maybe he's telling him, my stupid brother tried too hard to take more time than he needed. Mm-hmm. To cut off the phone, so I dealt with it in my own particular way. I don't know.
I only have plain M&Ms. I left the peanuts at home. It's...
Could be.
Yeah. it's also gearing up. All right, showtime.
Yeah.
He's getting ready to make his address.
Maybe at this point, Carl is telling Hans what to say. He's the puppet master. Who knows? Could be.
Who knows?
And at this point, we see that they're starting to put all the guests together they're rounding them up basically, like one would do in a Western. You're rounding everybody up, and then we get a shot of Ellis, who is just walking back and forth. He's clearly paranoid from all the drugs he's been taking. And he goes,
rat Fink.
Yeah, seriously. He goes, stay calm. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Trying to convince himself that everything's going to be okay, even though it won't be, because you're stoned out of your mind and you're going to do something really stupid in about an hour that's going to, end any hostile takeover you might want to try. And I love the way that they show us Holly and Takagi. Right after they show him, you see him paranoid, and the two of them are as calm. They're completely with, they're steel, or what's the phrase?
Yes.
They're
stone faced.
Yeah. Well, no. Stone faced is actually Alice.
Yeah.
They have nerves of steel. That's what it is.
Yes. What's also funny is you could tell they're both thinking.
Yeah.
Like Takagi is really considering the situation, but they also both at different times give glances at Ellis of like, Jesus Christ, I'm trapped here with him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but he's also high management, so he must be good at what he does. That they're able to suffer through everything else in order to have him there.
Well, yes, it's one thing to be a good business negotiator. It's a very different to be cool under pressure in a life or death situation.
Correct.
Which is something that Ellis is not demonstrating right now.
So John enters the floor, and there's tons of construction going on. We see all of the you can tell that this is where they're still doing work on the 20th Century Fox room. This doesn't need to be a set. This could be real. And they change the music, and it adds to the tension and stuff like that. And I love the way that John walks around and checks everything that's going on in this whole floor. He's trying to take it all in, and he does it all in a – he's very nervous the whole time for obvious reasons.
Yes, and also you could tell that his police training is keeping in – is kicking in because he has the gun pointed out. And he has his back to the wall that he's already checked for safety, So if someone's going to enter the room, he's going to see it, and he's trying to keep as much of the room in front of him as possible.
Yeah, and he's doing a great job of it. There's we can see that his stint on moonlighting helped with giving Bruce Willis the idea of what he's supposed to, how he's supposed to act in these type of situations, I guess.
Yes.
And then he, in the middle of the room, we see this work desk, which seems a little out of place, but you know, well, I guess there's a reason that it's there.
Yeah,
well, it's there because we need it.
Yeah, it looks like a drafting table, you know, where you see like a blueprints there and a thermos, so that's probably just somewhat, you know, a foreman's workstation.
Yeah, I mean, there's blueprints. There's two thermoses. There's a phone, which John picks up and realizes that doesn't work. Okay, there's a yellow paper pad. There are pencils that are sitting in a pencil holder,
mm-hmm.
you know, like maybe some sort of mug or something like that. You know, and then there are like plans of, you know, what they're doing there and stuff like that. I mean, it's great that they're paying good attention to detail here. You know, the way that they do this.
Yeah.
And then he walks over to the window and he looks out and he sees a woman, you know, in an apartment. That's you know, what's really funny is that in this entire building, all the lights are out except for in that apartment. So I guess this is, you know, we discussed yesterday about Joel Silver, you know, adding certain parts into the movie, and I guess there's a reason why he decided to add this one.
Yes, yeah, a woman walking around in her
underwear, talking on the phone.
Yes, and
having John look.
Well, also, like, you know, I'm in a studio apartment right now. To think that you would have an apartment with no blinds, and to have them open in the middle of the night, it just seems like an odd choice.
Well, again, this isn't the middle of the night. This is 6 p.m. But even so, 6, 7 p.m. She's walking around, you know, maybe she says, okay, I'm on the 30th floor. Who's going to be looking at me?
Mm.
You know, and then she forgot that they just built this building across the way. You know, oh, damn, there's that Nakatomi building across the way that they just made.
Yeah.
That they just finished building. You know, so I don't know. So quickly, what do you know about a thermos?
Thermos.
Yes.
I know a good Marine joke about thermoses, but that's
Is it family friendly?
yeah. Two Marines are sitting at the mess hall. One of them carries a thermos. The other one's never seen one before and goes, "What's that?" He goes, "It's a thermos. It keeps hot things hot and cold things cold." And his friend says, "That's amazing. That's incredible. I got to get me one of those." He buys one. He starts using it. And a few days later, his commanding officer notices he's carrying the thermos around and goes, "Private, what is that?" "It's a thermos, sir. It keeps hot things hot and cold things cold." "Really? What do you have inside it?" "Two cups of coffee and a popsicle."
That's great. I think friend of the show Brian Lockhart's gonna love that one. He's you know, he does the Marine Corps Minute. He'll love that one. So,
oh well, my dad's retired Army, so
that's fine.
Yeah, so those jokes make fun of the other services.
So a thermos is also known as a vacuum flask, a de-war flask, or a de-war bottle. Okay, it's an insulating storage vessel that greatly lengthens the time over which its contents remain hotter or colder than the flask's surroundings. It was invented by Sir James DeWar in 1892. Okay, it consists of two flasks placed one within the other, which are joined at the neck. The gap between the two flasks is partially evacuated of air, creating a near vacuum, which significantly reduces heat transfer by conduction or convection. When used to hold cold liquids, this also virtually eliminates condensation on the outside of the flask. So it's a great idea. You know, the idea, the way that it works, you know, that you're able to put stuff in and it, you know, can keep things. Now, there are technological applications which rely on the idea of the double vacuum flask. So you have like MRI machines and NMR machines, stuff like that, that rely on that because they have two vacuum sections. They have the inner flask, which contains liquid helium, and the outer flask, which contains liquid nitrogen. And they have a vacuum section in between. And it helps with make these machines work really well. So I thought that was really cool to see how,
cool,
you know, an idea from 230 years ago has, you know, helped with technology nowadays of the way that these things work.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Learning something every minute here.
Well, that's what we do here. We learn about things that you wouldn't expect to learn about on Die Hard. You know, who would think of learning about a thermos on Die Hard? You know, it happens. We go to strange places. Yes. You know, when you least expect them, and when we have time. When we don't have time, we skip them. But, you know, who knows? So at this point, it moves back to a shot of Hans, who's in the center of the room, and he's holding some sort of like little book in his hand. And he's like holding his hands in a certain way, trying to calm everyone down.
Yeah, and I love this, that he has this notebook. You could tell he's pre-written this speech, and he has it on hand, but he's also memorized it.
Yeah.
And it's several times.
It's a date book. It's a pocket calendar or something like that. I used to have something like that back in the 80s, you know, when I was in high school. I remember I had one of those, you know, where every day you can flip through. Nowadays, there's no need for something like that nowadays. You know, today you can just use a Palm Pilot. You know,
yeah.
Who uses Palm Pilots? Who knows? So he tries to, you know, he starts moving his hands in a motion to calm everyone down, and that's pretty much how this minute ends. You know, and I love the way that all of the guards around him, you know, get really menacing, and they start pointing their guns, you know, to try and show, ooh, we have power here. You know, listen to what Hans has to say. I mean, you're gonna have to wait until Monday to hear what he has to say, but still. Listen to what he has to say.
Yeah, and especially in that last shot, there's a lot of posing that's going on.
Yes, yes. And I love, you look at Carl. Carl was just leaning against the wall, arms crossed. Like, go ahead, make my day. Yeah. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, let's jump right in.
All right. So the script has a few little discrepancies, as always. First of all, I love the description about the floors. It says, John enters the unfinished floor. It says, eventually it will be one large secretarial pool, but only a portion is completed. Half-finished partitions and office furniture in its original plastic wrappings are everywhere. One end has a few lonely finished working areas. McLean moves quickly to a desk and picks up the phone. It's not working. He looks at he looks out the window at a neighboring building. Then we get McLean's point of view. A high-rise apartment building a half block away sparkles with lights. McLean stares at a pretty girl in her bedroom. She's wearing drop-dead underwear right out of Victoria's Secret's catalog. As we watch, she flops down on her bed and with one long leg in the air, effortlessly dials a call on her high-tech phone. It seems so easy. And then it shows John again, says frustrated. He watches this, knits his brow, and says, think. That's it. And then, then it goes back to the hostage floor on the 30th floor. It says the employees have been herded to the center of the room where the desks have been pulled back. Many people are whimpering. Holly looks around the room for McLean. She's so intent on this that she doesn't see one terrorist waving her forward. Exasperated, he shoves her. Her glare at him shows us her mettle. A wider shot as the employees are bunching together. Ellis seeks out Holly. He's clearly scared, but trying to fake courage. He pats her hand reassuringly. Hans steps up on top of a desk and looks over the group. He reaches into a pocket. Several people cringe, but what he comes out with is a Bottega Veneta pocket notebook. He checks his own scribblings like a dais speaker. So again, it's a great description.
Yeah, and you could tell the architecture of the layout of the office building changed the way that
scene was staged. Yeah, I'm glad they changed it. Mm-hmm. It would have seemed much stranger if they were in the middle of an office as opposed to just like a general lobby where they're having this party.
Okay,
and stuff like that. Yeah. So a few little discrepancies there. So every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Surprise. So I have a little segment surprise for you, but apparently you have one for me too. So, not only are you going to be surprised by what I'm going to ask, I'm going to hopefully be surprised by what you're going to ask. I wonder if it's the same thing. We'll have to wait and see. There has been much debate over the last 34 years about this movie, whether it is considered a Christmas movie or not. So explain. What do you think? Is it or isn't it, and why?
I think yes, it is. Both be, you know, because it takes place at Christmas. The redemption arc, you know, because a lot of it, you know, it goes through family. John McClane, you know, over the course of this long journey, he finds a way to communicate with his wife, and bring his family back together. And, you know, even just, you know, all of the, you know, the music that comes at the end of this movie, you know, it's definitely, I think that Christmas feel, permeates the film. And I think it is an important part of it. And, you know, it's one of the reasons I always make sure that I check out this movie at least once during the Christmas season every year.
All right. Great. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, so what's your surprise segment for me?
Well, I did a top five. Right, that's a Christmas movies. Top five movies that you wouldn't you know, at first glance think is a Christmas movie, or you have to be reminded that, oh, this takes place at Christmas. So you know, it's another top five list like we did with the. With the Die Hard knockoffs and the Alan Rickman films. And a lot of this is just a look through the career of Shane Black, who was one of the people who contributed to Die Hard. Yes. But I do have some other movies in there as well. So number five is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yes. Number four is Gremlins.
Okay, good choice.
Number three is Trading Places.
Okay,
Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, of course, 1983.
Yes, number two is the double feature that I think goes with Die Hard every year, which is Lethal Weapon.
Of course, yes. Joel Silver. There you go.
Yes, and number one is an oldie but a goodie. One of my favorite movies from 1960. It's The Apartment with Jack Lemmon. Yes.
Okay. That's great. Isn't that more New Year's than Christmas? I mean, it also deals with Christmas, but
yeah, New Year. Well, it starts on Christmas Eve. Right. You know, Shirley Lou mm-hmm. McClain ends up on his apartment on Christmas Eve.
Yes. The way the cookie crumbles, cookie wise.
Yes. Well, I guess it's time to shuffle up and deal.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. Thank you very much. That was a great, great little extra segment. I appreciate that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you want to one final time tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Lil Eddie O'Hare. There's not much there now, but hopefully there will be soon. And you can check out my podcasting exploits in the DCTV Report and the Wicked Theory podcast. Check out the archives of both of those. And Rob, I want to thank you so much for having me. This has been such a fun experience.
I had a great time too. I hope that in future seasons, whether it's a Die Hard movie or not, I hope that you'll be you and I have so much in common. So you know, you we're both movie guys. What can I tell you?
And, yeah, that would be great.
You know, I know that you talked with Palmer about the fact that, you know, that you do the Oscar challenge every year. So do I. Yes. You know, for me, it's very important to do it. I don't include the document, the shorts, though. Those are a little harder to come by. So I steer away from those three. But, for me, shorts aren't the same as full-length movies. What can I say?
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, half the reason I'm able to do it every year is because I live in New York City.
Right.
So, you know, for you not to live there and be able to still complete that challenge, I really applaud you. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, but it's fun. It's a hell of a lot of fun, that I can tell you. And I've gone back and done so many, you know, for many of the years in past, I've seen all the Best Picture nominees that are available. There's like three from the early 1930s that you can't even find, like The Guardsman and White something. I don't even remember the names of them, whatever, but I've seen most of them. So you can go to my website and you can see reviews of every one of those, sometimes multiple reviews,
you know,
if you want to take a look at that. So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us and me this week. It's been a lot of fun. And like I said, hopefully hopefully you didn't have a bad enough time that you'll be willing to come back in future seasons. You know, we'll see about all right. that. All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can go directly to my website, Movie Rob Minute. Or if you want to just look at movie reviews that I've done, you can go to my normal older website where it's just movie reviews. At this point, I have over 10,000 movie reviews on my site. So that's movierob.wordpress.com. So until Monday, have a great weekend and yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.